I'm so happy you made it. It was a little bit touch and go coming from Israel. We weren't sure until the last minute whether you'd make it. I know there's more important things happening in Israel at the moment than the RV Capital meeting, but thank you for so much for being here.
Thank you for inviting me, and it's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. And and while we're on the topic of Israel, let me make one very clear statement about that before we then talk about business, which is what we're here for. I was horrified and disgusted by the attacks that I saw on the 7th of October. As a student of German history, I saw the Holocaust, studied the Holocaust firsthand, and I simply couldn't believe we're seeing pogroms again in the 21st century. It was a terrible thing, and I hope we never see anything like that again. Well, I feel slightly emotional now. Okay, Wix. Nir, it's a mixed group here. We have some wonderful, talented investors here, but we also have some doctors and some lawyers who really only think about investing once or twice a year. Maybe just to get everyone on the same page to start with, perhaps you could describe for us who are Wix's customers and what is the problem you're solving for them?
Wow. You know, when someone from my team asked that question, I asked them, who's the customer for Microsoft Office? Who's the customer for Word, for PowerPoint? And I know this is a big, very big statement, because essentially I think almost anyone eventually in their life can and would like to use that. We are in the 21st century, and pretty much everyone at some point in their lives would like to have good access to the internet, not only to to consume content and information, but also to put things of their own up there. And it can be a tiny, small business, it can be a bigger business, it can be something for personal use, it can be a portfolio, it can be something that goes along with your hobby. And our vision, our goal is to allow all of that, enable that, and make it very easy and simple process for you to be able to onboard. Much like some of those other softwares that, you know, those Microsoft softwares from that started in the 90s and became so dominant in our lives, there's, you know, an easy way to start and do some of it, but you know, there's you can continue mastering the software after for a very long time and create very complex and elaborate things on it. So we have, you know, we have hundreds of millions of people who registered and used our platform over the course of the lifetime of the company, and we still get millions that join every quarter. And the core of the more paying customers will be the people who are looking more for a business opportunity and have a business that they want to run, and for that they need a website.
Yeah, I guess a lot of people perhaps associate website building software with just like a page with maybe a picture, a few nice pictures, a little bit of text. Maybe describe some of the functionality a Wix website can have to help run a business.
Well, I think, you know, looking back in time to 2008, when we first introduced our first solution, that was the one pager or the few pages with a little bit of text and a few images and maybe an embed code to YouTube, if you were very sophisticated, was indeed the ecosystem in which websites were run. But we're not in 2008 anymore. And the technology moved, you know, a very long way forward, especially with the expansion of the mobile devices, and the fact that everyone is carrying a little computer with browser in their pocket. And I think that with that advanced, the opportunities for tiny and small businesses really advanced, and this is where we come in. Because essentially, if you were a Nike and you wanted to create something, a very complex website, you can spend millions of dollars doing that. But if you're a tiny business, and sometimes, you know, we're thinking about, you know, sometimes the businesses we refer to are smaller than what is even on the radar of any agency that is looking at tiny businesses. So Nick's wife, for example, is running a Wix website. And you know, she's doing her music, and she's presenting and selling it through the website. I don't think she is what would be customarily being thought of as a small business. She's a one-woman show, essentially. And 20 years ago, if she wanted to do something like that, she had almost zero venues to try and develop that kind of business. Today, that's almost obvious that anyone can do that. And with that, I think, is what we are enabling. We're trying to take all of that complex technology and make it into something that anyone in this room can go in and just, you know, start a website, start a business, and support it.
Yeah. The way oftentimes these type of talks customarily go is you ask for a show of hands in the audience of who's a customer of Wix. And it's an exercise we don't need to do, because the RV Capital website runs on Wix, and everyone who registered for the event had to create an account who wants to receive my blog or whatever. So everyone in this room is a Wix customer.
That's a nifty trick. I like that.
So that's the company, but tell us about Nir, the person, how you came to Wix, and what your role is now, and what your development has been.
Wow. Well, like many things in life, it was a happy accident. I was not in the path of being an executive in a tech company at all. I grew up in Tel Aviv. I did an extended military service as a naval officer. I really liked education. I studied education in college after service. And I was slowly edging myself to working in education, maybe becoming a teacher or something like that. And then a really good friend of mine called me up and said, you know, we just started a new company. Wix was about 3 months old back then.
Well, so you were almost part of the original founding team then?
If you ask them, I am. For me, it's hard to say I'm a founder because I missed it by 3 months. But I knew two out of the three founders very well, since they were good friends of my older brother. I knew them since I was in my early teens. And they brought me in and said, you know, we just need you for a couple of weeks to help around the office and, you know, just make sure that a few things that are stuck can be unblocked. And they gave me a list. And the next day I came and said, okay, what else do you need? They said, well, we gave you a list. I said, well, that was yesterday's list. What do you need for today? It was, by the way, I'm not that great. It was really a dumb list. Really simple stuff. And they said, wow, they were easily impressed. That was also a good thing working for me. Can you stay not for 2 weeks, but stay forever? And essentially I got sucked in. My job is I'm the chief operating officer, and it's a very flexible, fluid job. From my point of view, my role is to figure out what's not working well in the company and try to fix it in a way that then I can pull out and for it to keep on working well as things go by. And essentially, me and Avishai, the CEO, kind of divide the, you know, he's a big, a deep thinker. He likes to take a problem and deep dive into it so he can figure out, you know, how to attack it and change it and solve it. Whereas I'm the guy who can hold many balls in the air at any given point of time. So I do all of the day-to-day stuff. And he is more responsible for kind of thinking about the long-term strategy and you know, how and where to take us. Obviously, you know, we cross paths quite a few times a day in thinking and solving issues. But at the core of it, this is kind of how we divide the roles between us.
Yeah, wonderful. We love talking about the business, and we will for sure do that shortly. But when we have, and I'm going to call you a founder, when we have a founder with us, what we also love to think about is some of the kind of the seminal events in the development of the company, which really kind of maybe created the values which exist today. Maybe you want to draw attention to one or two of those, if there's any that come to mind.
Well, it's a room full of investors. And I got to say that I think the single most memorable point of time for me is something which, you know, a room full of entrepreneurs will really relate to. And it's very early in time. It's much, it's pre-IPO. It's more before most of our investment rounds. So we introduced the first product in the summer of 2008. It was based on Adobe Flash, which was back then the ruling technology in order to put things in browsers. We're just getting started. And we came up with a whole bunch of different things that people can create and with our platform. There was greeting cards for emails, and there was, you can create, well, back in 2008, the big thing around was MySpace. So you can create comments for MySpace, and we had a whole thing where you can actually edit your whole MySpace page and extend it and do all crazy shit with it. Sorry, pardon my French. And then the last thing we've added, we actually delayed the release of a product by a few months, was the ability to create websites. And then once we released that, released all different options, we found out that the most popular ones were MySpace comments and websites. And we said to ourselves, "Where the problem with MySpace comments, one is how it's extremely hard to monetize. And also we're dependent on someone else, on MySpace, which who knows how long they're going to last," which was a good call because it didn't last that long. So we went with websites and started selling. And we started this very clunky solution for buying the subscription that we're now selling in thousands every day. Back in October of 2008. But if you all remember, September of 2008 was a very rough time in the world, you know, subprime crisis and the stock market and bear stearns and everything's happening. And throughout the summer, our investors said, you know, world is shaky, take money from us. So you can keep on running and doing this, and we're just releasing the product. We said, but we want an up round, and we want better terms. They said, well, we're not going to put a no shop. Go shop around, do whatever you want. Obviously, we came back in September and said, where do we sign? We want the money. But then everyone was firing and shrinking and cutting down. And in November, the board came together and they said, well, what's the plan? And we said, you know, we just started selling, and we don't want to cut down anything. But we have this little calculation we did in the Excel, really, we're willing to absorb anything. And if we carry on and increase, and now we're selling 5 subscriptions a day, if we get to April, which is 6 months from now, and the average is going to be 80 a day, then essentially we're break even. So give us 6 months of run rate, we'll hire and fire according to plan, not according to any cutback. We get this to April and it's good, then we carry on, and if not, then we'll start slicing up the company. We got to 90, I think, in April. And I think the pivotal point of time was that from April 2009 was the first moment in time that we never had to raise money anymore. We decided and wanted to raise money because we wanted to grow the company faster. But at any point of time, we knew that we can cut back on marketing and just stay, you know, grow slower, but be break even, and we're not be, sorry, at the mercy of investors, which is a really big moment of time for an entrepreneur.
Yeah. Thanks for that. And maybe also a quick word on the culture at Wix. I know there's a wonderful esprit de corps there. Maybe you can say a few words about it.
The culture of Wix, well, I think, you know, the last few years really emphasized this for us much further than we all wished for. But there's, many times there's this assumption or this concept where people think that, you know, a company is, you know, it is a for-profit organization, and the bottom line is the most important thing, and it cannot coincide with taking, you know, taking care of the people or it can, but up to a very, you know, small extent, and you should, you know, put the company finances ahead of everything else. Now, I'm not saying that you shouldn't. I'm just saying that from my standpoint and how I think about the culture is that I think that taking extra care or going all out when something really bad happens in the world eventually pays off for the company, okay? In a real way, not in a theoretical way. I think, you know, I'm not going to go into Israel right now, but it's an easier event, which you have a longer perspective now of 2 years, is the war in Ukraine. We had, you know, before the war in Ukraine, when the war started, we had 950 employees in Ukraine, and suddenly the world turned upside down. And we dealt with evacuating them and getting as many out of the country as they wanted to go and as we could before, and then helping the people who stay in the country. And we created a hub for the ones who got out of the country in Krakow, in Poland, and essentially built this whole infrastructure for them, not only to work together, but also some came with kids, some came with family members. And it was 2 months of craziness just to try to get people to safety. How did that pay off? Eventually, you know, if I would have lost 500 employees all of a sudden, I would have had a massive disruption to the company. Okay, it has a big impact on the business. Instead, I kept my employees, and I got extremely loyal employees that really want to put in the extra time and the extra effort in order to come through. Somebody asked me yesterday, you know, in Israel, there's a lot of people being called to reserve duty. How do you handle that? And the answer is, at the end of the day, is because you create that kind of atmosphere, that kind of culture, if somebody gets pulled out, everyone else jump in and try to cover for them in order to make sure that nothing gets falls behind. And I think we managed to create a culture where people are really strong believers in what we do. And we know they know that we have their back as people, so they have our back as a company.
Yeah. What we see time and time again is that great companies, but also great countries, get stronger when they face adversity. And my sense is that's what's happening at Wix at the moment, but also at Israel. So everyone in this room here is a huge fan of Charlie Munger, who very sadly passed away. Warren Buffett's partner, of course. And his sort of one of his seminal achievements was persuading Warren Buffett to spend less time on the price of a company and more time on the quality, and taught him this sort of concept of competitive advantage. And so my question there is, what is Wix's competitive advantage? You know, what does it do either better than other website builders, or what does it do cheaper?
Well, I think that first and foremost, it's about the product. You know, sometimes you go, in order to build a big company, you first and foremost need to be solving a big problem, right? Now, I don't think there could be an argument that the problem or the challenge to help everyone be able to bring their dreams, their visions, their businesses online is something which is big, it's global, it's growing, it's not shrinking, it keeps on increasing as more and more people, you know, join and use the internet. So I think from that standpoint, we always had that going for us. But the other part is about having the right product. So you can say, okay, sometimes you move into a new, you know, into a new industry and you're the first product out there, okay? The first car, okay, the very famous quote, they would have asked for faster horses, right? So that's not the case for Wix. When we started a company, when we established the first builder that we put out there, there were many builders, many, many, many builders. We were not the first ones. We're, you know, even rather late if you look at all of the other competitors that were out there back then. Most of them are either gone or shrank to the size that we almost don't encounter them. And I think it was about having a completely different approach to the product and a completely different approach to the business model. In terms of the product, I think that back then, the ruling idea was that everyone in this room were not really should not get the responsibility of playing with our websites, because they're probably, whatever we're going to put in their hands, they're going to ruin it. So let's give them a page and put boxes and content which we'll design, and you can just edit the content within. And most of the website builders were like that. By the way, it's a much easier challenge from the technology perspective, because things don't move around so much. So it's easier with browsers and in different devices. It's also easier because I can decide on the absolute positioning beforehand, so I don't have to worry about what happens if the customer actually moves things around. Sadly, that's a bad product. And I think our approach was that we want to give the full power to the hand of the users. And make sure that allow them to make mistakes, and then maybe help them make it pretty and give them other tools to do that. And I think for that, you needed a much deeper technological approach, which is, I think, forever was what was the advantage we had if you look at everyone else in our industry. We invested a lot in technology, we still do. We're trying to bring in new and competitive technology to solve things. Last year, when everyone was extremely scared about AI, we were actually cheering, because it just pushed us another 5 years into the future in a very short amount of time, and allowed us to take advantage of more technology and put it in the hands of our customers. I think that's the biggest, most important, most important part.
Yeah, that's great. So I think most people would agree that the Wix website builder is a great product. But maybe a question mark would be, is this a company that can make money, especially after some of the losses in more recent years? Maybe you can speak to where we are today in terms of profitability and what the long-term vision is for where the profitability and free cash flow can get to.
Well, I think that question is a thing of the past, okay? Not about what I'm projecting for 2024, 2025. But if you look back, obviously COVID was a big challenge, because we got so much demand in such a short amount of time. And the only way to try to deal with it was to brute force it with headcount. Not the smartest thing, but I'm not sure we had a better option. As it came with massive growth on the business side, it was easier to do, but obviously as it subsided, that's where we had to make the alignments. I think like many other tech companies that grew up in the past 15 years of only plenty and only growth, it was a hard turnaround, and suddenly you have to start looking at how you cut back and manage budget in a much tighter way. But it was also, I would say, as an executive, it was an amazing lesson to have and learn, so you can be a better management team. And I think we really deeply absorbed it. If we finished 2022 with roughly $30 million of free cash flow, which were, I don't know, a low single digit, 1 or 2% of our revenue, exactly, very low margin. The current we haven't reported yet. So the current projection we gave to the street calls for roughly $240 million of free cash flow. Wow. So from 22 to 23, that's
from 30 to 240 is a pretty meaningful.
It's a pretty meaningful jump, exactly. At a lower low teen margin, which obviously we expect to grow. We are very confidently saying that by 2025 we will at least meet or exceed the 40 of the Rule of 40 in terms of margin versus growth. I think we're still operating in an environment where projecting growth is more complex, because the economy is still a little bit shaky. But I'm 100% sure that we'll meet that target. But it's more than that. We are already in GAAP profitability for 2023. So for the year that just wrapped up, and we don't plan to of going back. So we are profitable, we'll continue running profits, and the goal now is to learn how to accelerate growth again and grow in a profitable way. And I think that's an amazing lesson for a company to learn.
Yep, and if I remember correctly, I think you mentioned a target of $500 million in free cash flow at some point.
Yeah, so 2025 to be in the Rule of 40, and a at least $500 million of cash flow.
Yeah, and I think the market cap today is about $7 billion, so that gets you to about 14 times free cash flow, which isn't super expensive. But one of the pushbacks people in the audience would potentially have is, yeah, but there's this stock-based compensation. So what is the perspective for the stock-based compensation?
Well, I think, you know, tech companies are still very competitive beasts for talent. And, you know, we run a company from Tel Aviv, one of the most competitive places on earth for very, very strong talent. I think stock-based compensation is not going to go away, but like anything else, it can be much better managed. And I think we've started turning that around as well. I think first and foremost, the GAAP profitability indicates that we are managing to generate the money to cover also for the financial loss of the stock-based compensation or the cost. But more than that, we started engaging in buying back stock in order to offset the dilution generated by the compensation. And I think that as time progresses, the dilution or the share count has already been, it's not growing as fast as before. The goal now is to get it to stabilize it so it doesn't grow, and then to start decreasing it over time. And one of the measures we're looking at is the cash flow per share, which is also very much on the rise. It's going to be roughly $3.50 a share for 2023, and we believe it can be even somewhere between 7 to 8, even at the higher ranges of that for 2025.
Well, that's a great perspective. Wix is a very capital-light business, which means it's a business, unlike, say, an electric utility. If it wants to grow its business, it needs to build a new power plant. Wix is the kind of business which requires no capital to grow, which is a wonderful attribute, but also means it creates the problem, in inverted commas, of what do you do with that capital? How do you allocate it? So you kind of already touched on it in your last answer, but maybe you can talk about that.
Well, I think companies have generally two venues of growth, right? One is organic, the other one is through acquisitions. I'm not saying that we will never be acquisitive or that we'll never acquire anything significant. We have been acquiring companies over the years, but it's mostly really small companies, and mostly about absorbing a product and technologies that we feel that are complementary. And I think we have this great advantage, again, going back to the environment and the ecosystem we are in, where there's so much opportunity of growth that can be done organically, which means that we don't see the acquisition path as the main one for us. That means that at least as soon as you start generating money and not losing money, which is where we all want to be, I think one of the best things I can do is start exercising a well thought of a buyback strategy. By the way, it also for me as an executive, it gives us some control. Because other than that, we have no other thing that connects us to the share price. Like, we want the company to perform and for the share to follow. But if we deploy at least some of the proceeds for the buyback, that also gives us some control on our destiny from that standpoint as well.
That's also a great perspective for shareholders. I have, I think, two more questions, and then I'm going to give the audience, it should leave about 15 minutes for audience questions, so you can start thinking about what you want to ask about. So the first one would be the topic of AI. There were fears at the start of last year that AI was a risk for Wix. I think maybe now people are starting to see it more as an opportunity. What is your view?
So for a company whose goal in life is to take complex technology problems and simplify that for the end customer, AI is another amazing opportunity. We've already established that it is, you know, pushing our business forward, and it does so simply by giving more value in the hands of our customers. Now, one thing that, by the way, that we haven't had a chat to touch on is, you know, we've built the core of our business was built on the tiny little businesses, the people who come in and want to build a website for themselves. And about 2/3 of our business today are those people. But the other third, which is actually growing faster than the core business or the self-creator business, are what we call the partner business, are the people who come and are essentially want to use our platform as a baseline to cater for the needs of other customers, agencies. I was trying to convert your sister last night to our platform, and I'm still not giving up.
Let me just stop there for a second, because I forgot to mention Alex at the beginning. My sister Alex, who actually runs a social media marketing agency, including website building. So a little plug for her business there, but she helps me organize this event. So perhaps a round of applause there.
No, wait. Yeah. No applause. You should boo her because she's using WordPress. Anywho.
But that's going to change, right?
I hope. But that's on me, not on her. But for them, so if AI, for someone who doesn't have the right affinity to understand not only how to build a website, but also if you're a small business owner, you don't really know what you need in your website. You don't know what's the best, you know, utilities and functions that should be used for someone who's a lawyer versus a spa versus a bakery. And obviously the AI helps you, it's a much easier flow to help the creation process, but also the understanding of what needs to be in the website, what should be added, and also how to manage the website and your business afterwards. Those are all amazing capabilities that AI solves in a much easier fashion. But also if you're running an agency, okay, AI is extremely important. In theory, the AI will take away the business of the designers and the agencies, I don't see that happening anytime soon. What I do see happening is that if I can bring in the right AI capabilities into the platform and then give it to Alex and cut her job, the time to deliver value to her customers by 20, 30, 50%, I made her business much better. And that's another great opportunity that lies ahead.
Yeah. Well, your comments there sort of already touched a little bit on my final question, but it was exactly on the topic of your partner business. So Wix obviously grew up as a DIY business for people to build the website themselves. And several years ago, you decided to attack the far bigger market, which is the market where agencies build websites for individual business. Just describe a little bit that opportunity for us.
Absolutely. So it's really hard. It's an environment where data is a little bit quirky, meaning it's really hard to say exactly how many websites are being built by whom, because the key question is what is a website and whether any page is a website or it has to go, you know, beyond some certain mass. Still, in any mathematics you would run and data you're gonna crunch. Out of 10 websites, somewhere between, you know, 1 to 2 are being built by someone who's doing it for themselves, and then 80 to 90% are actually being built by builders, by designers, agencies, small ones, big ones, internal to some organization, external, anything. Even her business, which is a marketing agency business, still also has a layer of where they create the website, just because it attaches well to every other asset of the marketing campaigns. And we've always had these people on our platform using it, but as time progressed, we understood that they need more. They need much more complex capabilities. They're going to spend much more time and effort on the platform. We introduced a specialized editing environment about 3 years ago. We announced it in New York in February 2020, right before COVID hit. We called it Editor X, and it was a dedicated for designers, for agencies kind of a product. We spent about 2 years with this product and learned a ton. And we understood that we need to go even further. We need to create a dedicated work environment that is not only the editing environment, but also everything that's around it for agencies. We introduced a new, a whole new offering called Wix Studio throughout this summer. And it was in closed beta throughout the summer. It went to open beta on mid-October. So imagine all the craziness in Israel, and we are launching a new product at the same time. If you want to think resilience of a team.
Amazing, amazing.
And it is garnering amazing results. And again, like any other product, we need to improve it and take it forward. But we believe that that can be really the future of the company in terms of the of growth. As I spoke about reaccelerating, I think that's going to be one of the key engines that will allow us to reaccelerate the growth of the company for years to come. And let's see if I can convert Alex, which will be a good indication whether we did a good enough job there.
Yeah, and you have your quarterly newsletter where you normally profile a few agencies. Maybe we can feature Alex if you're successful.
Absolutely, we'd love to do that. That would be a sign of a good sign of success.
Okay, I got you some unpaid advertising there. Okay, questions from the audience. Achim, I don't know if it's possible to pan around if when people ask their question, but I have two helpers for the microphones. We're big on child labor at RV Capital, as you know. We have my daughter Olivia and my son Tommy. Maybe a quick round of applause for them. Is there just one microphone? Tommy's coming as well. Is there another mic? If not, he can take my one. But the first question is here at the front.
Hello, can you hear me?
If you want to quickly state your name and where you're from, that would be great.
My name is Julian. I'm from London. My question is, what do your existing customer complain about the most, and what do you do to fix that?
What are they complaining about the most?
The most, yeah.
Well, it's obviously really changed in the last few months because we had a very different offering. One of the key learnings we understood when we wanted to move from EditorX to the new Wix Studio editing environment is EditorX was amazing solution for professional designers, which the really hardcore professional designers really liked. But the agencies wanted something else. They wanted to have the values and the deep editing capabilities that the pro designers wanted to have. But they still wanted it simplified because they care first and foremost about being able to deliver value quickly. So they need to cut down time throughout the creation process. The other thing that was very hard for them, and it goes back to the environment that we created, the workspace around it, is that they have their own different ways to manage clients. And manage websites, transfer the websites, get feedback, look parts of the website so the client can access some content but not everything and not mess up the design. They wanted to understand we give customer care per website. They wanted to understand what are the issues that each separate website has under the umbrella of their agency. So they can look at the calls attached to a client and not have it generalized. And those are just a few good examples of what people want to have in their own back office. And when we had to create, a whole new approach to that. Now our job is to keep on understanding what's missing and deliver more. We are throwing events on a regular basis all around the globe in different cities. So in fact, you say you're from London, right?
Yeah.
So we're going to have one in London early February. Okay, you can come and check it out. And generally, if you guys want to attend, just let me know. I'll figure out what's coming close, what's going to be close to your home in the coming months, and you can check it out for yourselves.
Okay.
Last one.
Hello.
I often hear. I just was going to make a quick comment, and I'll let you ask your question. I often hear people say like website building is a solved problem, but what I've always sort of experienced is like there's always something new that customers want. But next question's there.
Yes. Hello, Thomas from Frankfurt in Germany. I'm a private investor, nothing more. What quite often annoys me a bit is the cash outflow linked to stock compensations, and that tends in some companies to really get out of hand. So if you are talking about 500 million free or cash flow, that is not the answer we need to know. What is the cash flow after stock-based compensation? And I would also suggest, so that you don't annoy investors that much, how about changing the strategy? How about paying bonuses to the people you need and say, well, that's linked to one condition, 50% of your, let's say 60 or 40% of the payment, you have to go to the stock market and buy shares from the company. And if you want to know more about that strategy, have a look at Constellation Software. They do it this way, and they are very, very successful, and they are in the same business as you. So I have trouble to understand this point.
Yeah, well, first of all, I would love to learn new tricks and new ideas all the time, so I would go and check it out and see what they're doing. I think the value on the stock-based compensation from the company's standpoint that is different from the cash bonuses is that equity is the vesting period of the equity. Because at the end of the day, I'm trying to lock people in for a long time. That's my goal, is to find a talent and put them in to make sure that they stay with me for many years. And when you give them the stock-based compensation, you're right, in theory, I could tell them, take money and buy stock on your own. When you give it to them and you say, you know, have to stay another quarter for the next batch to mature and another quarter for the next batch to mature, you create a much more like a longevity process in terms of their way of thinking and staying in the company for the longer term. And you also tie them stronger to the dream, which should be all our dream, is generating value for shareholders and making more money. By the way, by stock-based compensation, you ensure that all of the employees are also shareholders, which means that there's a better chance to align them with the interest of shareholders. So I'm a big fan of the equity from that standpoint, because I think that from the managerial standpoint, it has a ton of value. I do agree with you that we need to find the ways to be very transparent about what does that mean in terms of the financials of the company. We need to make sure that we never let the stock-based compensation harm the profitability. And at the end of the day, treat it, you know, as he said, it's cash. It doesn't matter if it comes out from this pocket or from this pocket. So I just need to make sure that I put it front and center in a very clear manner.
Good morning. I'm Andrew Hollingworth. I'm from London. I'm an institutional investor. Could you just talk a little bit? I know nothing about website building. I'm a person that would have used an agency and has used an agency. So just to explain, there's in the agency build, there's, I think you said that's about 90% or 80% of websites. So what are the sort of market share? I know WordPress, I've heard of them. So what are the market shares of those companies today? And why are they not going to be able to do what you're going to be able to do? Why are they going to cede market share to you? That's the bit I don't really sort of understand.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, it's still very fragmented. Okay, there's a lot of some of the agencies, the bigger agencies that have a full development team will sometimes just, you know, write code in order to build a website. And then I would say that the smaller agencies that rely on some sort of a CMS software solution will more often than not use WordPress. WordPress is the predominant, I would say, still the predominant legacy technology out there. Most of it, when we say WordPress, there's a company called Automattic that has a business, and there's the WordPress.org ecosystem, which is an open source ecosystem. Automattic is the biggest contributor to the open source, to that open source. And the vast majority of websites on WordPress are based on the open source side. they have the advantage of being out there for many, many years, having a ton of flexibility that the agencies really love. And also this is what they know and have been working with for many years. They have the downside of being an open source solution where there's a lot of overhead for the agency or for whoever is running the website, because you need to do the hosting yourself and you need to care about changes to the environment. You need to make sure that you know the website is under a CDN and so it could be fast and well performing globally, assuming that's something that's important for you. It's much harder to control security and prevent hacking, because it's separate pieces of software, and you don't always know that you are supposed to upgrade the software on a regular basis, or you might have missed a piece, and then you don't patch it for security in the same way that you should. And I think that what we're trying to do is say we can bring we can bring all of that flexibility in a guarded garden. So it's not closed, but it's because you can introduce your own code. But we are going to give you a native environment that still safeguards that code. So you won't have all of that risk associated with working with an open source solution. And we are innovating really quickly in a market and an environment where there are many, many, many challenges. My belief is that we can, we do have a really good chance to go after that WordPress ecosystem and take a big chunk of it.
Thank you.
Hi, Niamh. Hi, Rob. Thanks for hosting this and thanks for coming. My name is Sinji Chen. I work for a venture capital firm. We're based in Menlo Park in Boston. So I invest in a different spectrum than many investors here, I think. I want to ask two questions about AI. I'm intrigued. We actually use Wix to build our website. So we're a customer. I'm intrigued by the Wix Studio idea because I think it provides an opportunity for you to encourage your customers to put their data on your platform, which is highly valuable in the age of AI. So I want to ask about, how do you think about data strategy? How do you think about how and whether you can use the data from customers to build and enhance your AI capabilities? Because you're serving enterprise customers, presumably you can mix the data across customers, but there's also a lot of advantage in being able to train on cross customer data. For example, how do you help shoe companies build better images, or help advertising agencies create better videos for a certain type of companies? So that's one question. The second one is, what kind of AI vendors are you using? Are you using closed source providers such as OpenAI, Inflection, Google? Are you using open source? What are your thoughts on your long-term strategies in terms of proprietary versus open source? Thank you.
Sure. So first of all, one of the reasons we were very ecstatic last year when ChatGPT broke out and kind of suddenly educated everyone about AI is that we've been working in this space for a very long time. We introduced a much more naive model back in 2006 when we introduced ADI, artificial design intelligence. Which was a very much simplified AI engine to build websites. By the way, it was hugely successful on our platform and generated, really pushed our success and our revenues for many years. But we've had a very strong data science and AI team for a very long time. And one of the great things that happened last year was not only that there were new opportunities suddenly, but also the market got educated about the value. The consumers got educated about the value, which is much easier now to put AI capabilities in the hand of people because they want it. They are asking for it. Before that, people didn't really fully understand what's the essence of it. Now, from the data standpoint, we don't cross data between websites and between clients. It's your data, your content is yours. And we are very strict about the privacy for it. But as you said, we do understand the generalization of data in terms of layouts, in terms of structures, in terms of what's working better if you're in the shoe industry versus the building a website for a venture fund. And those things are schematics, are things that obviously we have access to and help us, you know, we are introducing now a new AI engine to build websites. This is no secret. We spoke about this publicly already. We're going to keep on leveraging that knowledge, not only to, you know, to make the creation process easier, better for us, but also because that means that you can be more successful as the client. From the perspective of who we generally are open to work with everyone. We have really strong ties with the OpenAI team, and we're using a lot of their capabilities. But we are also in close conversations with Microsoft on other aspects like Copilot, etc. Now also with Google and on their AI capabilities. We don't intend to build our own generative model, but rather use and work with them simply because it's a very big effort that we don't bring extra value to, but we are continuing to develop our own internal models that have to do exactly with that proprietary data that we have on how websites are being built and what makes them successful.
Thank you.
I think we've got time for one last question. That's almost on the hour. While the microphone's going around, just a quick note that Nir has very kindly said he's going to be here the whole weekend. I think you're part of the hiking group this afternoon, or maybe skiing. We're still maybe open, but anyway, he'll be there this afternoon, this evening, and tomorrow morning. So if anyone doesn't get to ask their question, there'll be an opportunity for the rest of the weekend. Who has the microphone? There it is at the back. Thank you.
Well, thank you. This is very impressive interviews. And then, so I'm Shin Yadeguchi. I'm Japanese, but then living in Shanghai. I'm from a family office. And I have been, I probably created the first website, a homepage, maybe 30 years ago. And then I switched from a WordPress to Wix maybe 10 years ago. So thank you very much for amazing services. And then, so I want to ask you one, the long-term questions, because I think all of us here are thinking about long-term, and then maybe 20 years, 30 years from now. And then the reason I'm asking, which I was very surprised after living in China for almost 10 years, nobody actually uses website anymore, which is shocking.
In China.
Not many, you know, the companies, they actually have a website. And it's actually really, you know, we have many different ways to see, you know, the company information. So it's been 30 years, I think, since the homepage or website was created. And then, you know, we can expect maybe next 20 years, you know, we continue using website. But then have you thought about, you know, the Wix over the next 20 years, the possibility of maybe we're using something completely different from website?
Well, first of all, again, I'm not an expert on you know, the Chinese ecosystem per se. I can say that for a while there, we wanted to figure out how can we expand our business into China, and we found out in China specifically there's a crazy amount of regulation around websites and domains, which also means that's where there's a surprisingly small amount of domains in China, which is just because there's a very high government regulations around it. I think, I don't think China is the right market to try to figure out the future of websites because of that. That being said, back in 2012, Avishai, our CEO, and my partner, and I met someone in San Francisco who tried to explain. He was an early investor in Facebook, and he tried to explain to us that websites are obsolete because everything is going to move to Facebook. Naturally, that didn't happen, and even Facebook, as the product itself, is becoming a little bit, you know, a thing for older people, whereas other newer social networks are becoming more and more popular, and even those new social networks are not replacing websites. The other claim, or the other thing that at some point was kind of the big belief, was that the mobile apps are going to replace websites, so everyone's going to have an app and won't need a website anymore. And we actually geared up for that. We bought a small company in Israel that was building apps, and we transitioned and we started offering the application to the small businesses. They didn't adopt it, and we kind of closed that line of business a long time ago. We still allow to create apps, but it's still very, very small. So at least right now, I'm sure that websites are not, they don't seem like they're going anywhere. That being said, none of us can foresee the great pivotal new technology of 5 years from now in terms of in terms of devices. And there might be that comes a really strong, amazing new format that will be a different, but it will be a different way to do what a website does, right? It's about creating a unique persona for yourself or for your business that you can control, and through which you can interact, sell, and converse with customers or with clients or fans or anything like that. And if that kind of a pivotal thing happens, then our responsibility will be to recognize it, understand it, and adopt it. I think that if you look at our history throughout the years, switching from Flash to HTML5 when there was actually no HTML5, it was still a myth. It was bits and pieces that Steve Jobs was fighting Adobe with. Our ability to switch over, to adopt and change, our whole strategy to understand that people need, different business solutions for their websites, the commerce solutions, selling time, selling tickets, selling seats in restaurants. You can do all of that on Wix today. 10 years ago, you couldn't because it wasn't a need. As things like that rose, we knew how to adopt and bring them into our house. And adopting to different devices, different browsers, all of those are massive challenges that we managed to churn through the years. And I definitely in 20 years from now, something can come up that's going to change the website, completely change the website industry. Our role, our job as management will be to recognize it and adopt and change. This is, big long-term companies survive only because they are, they disrupt their own business throughout time.
Nir, thank you so much for coming over. Especially making the trek over from Israel, given everything that's happening. You could see everyone loved it. We could have gone on a lot longer, but you're around, so there's plenty of time for people to ask their questions. Thanks again.